Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
We're getting paid less now than when I started. Less money now than when I started in 1978. How can that be?
Bristol Bay fishermen are planning to protest the price of sockeye salmon. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, July 18th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, while the lower 48 is trapped in a heat wave, much of Alaska is seeing the opposite.
This feels normal, and it's nice and cool, and I never get too hot. So yeah, actually, this feels pretty normal, and I'm very thankful we're here and not in the lower 48.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Quality childcare creates futures for families, children, and the state's economy. When children are safe, engaged, and learning, parents can work and everyone has a better outcome. THREAD has resources to support your family in their childcare search. Knowing what to look for in a licensed facility is important for the safety of your children. THREAD also offers parenting resources and support. To learn more about quality childcare in Alaska, visit threadalaska.org. This message sponsored by THREAD.
Fishermen from Dillingham to Naknek are planning a protest Thursday after Trident Seafoods posted a base price of just 50 cents per pound for Bristol Bay sockeye salmon. That's less than half of last year's price. As KDLG's Jack Darrell reports, fishermen were shocked and frustrated, and some are worried that this year's sockeye season will push them into the red.
The Dillingham Harbor is buzzing with crews returning from the fishing season. Many are reeling from the news of Trident Seafoods offering a base price of 50 cents per pound, which was announced in a letter Sunday night. Tyone Raymond is at the gates of the PAF boatyard waiting for a coffee. He's been fishing in Bristol Bay for over 5 decades. When he heard about the low base price, he decided he was done for the season.
You know, it's utterly demoralizing. It was a great season. We were catching fish, doing really well, and we knew that the price was going to be weak, but this is extraordinarily weak. If you adjust this for inflation, this is the weakest price we've ever seen.
Raymond says it's the lowest price he's seen in a lifetime of fishing. And prices for fisher's supplies are up too. He says it's hard for them to turn a profit when prices this year are less than half of what he and his father made almost 50 years ago.
But despite even our best efforts, we're getting paid less now than when I started. Less money now than when I started in 1978. How can that be?
Fishermen are planning to stage a protest in the Naknek River entrance on Thursday. Organizers say they will anchor from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. across the river entrance to oppose the low price from processors. Scott Johnston sits on top of the pilot house of his boat with a crewmate.
And that's just archaic, man. It's 2023. It's not 1993. It's not, you know, it sucks that we have to take that hit. Some people are going to leave this season in the red.
Leo Jennings is another fisher hit hard by the announcement and is calling an early end to his season. He's already begun offloading his boat. He has been fishing since the 1980s and says the price is worse than it has ever been, combined with higher gas prices, more expensive maintenance, and a higher cost of living.
1988, we got $2.30 a pound, and we're getting 50 cents. We got $50,000 worth of refrigeration equipment here. It's like, it's frustrating.
KDLG reached out to Trident Seafoods for comment, but did not hear back before airtime. Other Alaska seafood companies have not yet announced their base prices, but are expected to announce a similar price. Some fishers aren't even sure they'll break even this summer. Others, like Raymond, are considering leaving the industry altogether.
I mean, yes, you're going to make a few more dollars, but really, is it worth, you know, not having any sort of point of view and holding to it? You know, I think people shouldn't fish.
Heading into the season, seafood market analysts cited many factors that could drop prices for fishermen. Last year, the Bristol Bay fleet caught a record amount of sockeye. That fish flooded the market and is still being sold off in stores. Add to that a decrease in wholesale price for sockeye, a drop in consumer demand in grocery stores, and competition on the global market. Andy Wink is the director of the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. He says those factors drove down the average wholesale price for sockeye this year. Consumer demand is also down across most major markets for salmon, both domestically and in Europe.
You know, they've reined in their spending. Many species have seen slower retail sales volumes over the past 6 to 8 months. And so that's put some downward pressure on how much costs can be passed on to consumers and what prices they're willing to pay.
Wink says the lack of transparency in the industry also contributes to that frustration. And it's especially tough when processors ask the fleet to absorb costs when prices drop.
There's inflation on the cost side that affects everybody in the supply chain, but fishermen feel like they're left to absorb most of it.
As fishermen offload and ferry totes up the dock, they say they're holding out hope that processors will offer bonuses and an overall better price. In past years, the price has been posted before fishermen start catching. One skipper, named Logan Brandstetter, says it's especially frustrating to be hit with the low price at the end of the season.
We don't have the ability to plan, to project, and nothing. It's just a big secret until the end. You know, it's one of the only fisheries in the U.S. that there's no price posted before you go to work, and that just doesn't make any sense.
The Bristol Bay run is expected to wrap up by the end of the month. So far, fishing fleets have had a strong harvest, an estimated 35 million fish, nearing the forecast of 36 million this season. With reporting help from Corinne Smith in Dillingham, I'm Jack Darrell.
The body of a prominent wildlife biologist lost in a rafting accident on the Tulitna River on July 5th has been recovered. According to an Alaska State Troopers online dispatch, a group of rafting the Tulitna on Sunday found the body of 70-year-old John Craig George of Utqiagvik. His remains were found about 7.5 air miles downriver from the original search location south of Cantwell, where George had been traveling with companions in two rafts when one of them overturned. The Alaska Beacon reports that George had retired as a senior biologist from the North Slope Borough, where he spent decades studying both bowhead whales and the impacts of reduced sea ice on Alaska's Arctic coast. He was an acclaimed musician in Utqiagvik and helped to complete an unfinished book by his mother, Newbery Award-winning author Jean Craighead George, after her death. Troopers say a helicopter transported George's remains to Fairbanks and that his next of kin was notified. Alaska State Troopers say evidence shows that a Juneau man missing since last week drowned in Mendenhall Lake. According to a release today, video evidence confirms that Paul Jose Rodriguez Jr. drowned while kayaking last Tuesday. Rodriguez was not reported missing until Sunday night, even though his kayak had been found floating on the lake last Tuesday. During a search, an unnamed person turned over a helmet and GoPro camera that was confirmed to belong to Rodriguez. Troopers say the GoPro footage confirms that Rodriguez overturned in his kayak and drowned. An earlier statement from troopers says it is believed he was not wearing a personal flotation device or appropriate protective clothing for glacial water sports. Search teams will continue looking for his remains. Shishaldin volcano erupted a large ash cloud this morning on Unimak Island. The eruption has continued for hours, and the ash cloud is being pushed south by the wind over the Pacific Ocean. Nate Eckstein is the Science and Operations Officer for the Anchorage Volcanic Ash Advisory Center. He says the ash cloud is not affecting a high-traffic area for local air travel.
You can fly the north of the volcano and the island there if they need to get to Dutch or further west.
The ash cloud is high enough to affect international travel, though. Eckstein says trans-Pacific flights could be rerouted.
Operators' policies, most of them don't like to fly over something that's somewhat uncertain.
The Alaska Volcano Observatory says ash clouds are hazardous to engines, especially jet engines, and could cause them to stop working in midair. There are no reports of ashfall in the nearby communities of False Pass and Cold Bay, located over 20 miles away from the volcano. Matt Lowen with the Alaska Volcano Observatory says shipping boats under the ash cloud could see fall while traveling south of Unimak Island, and if they do, the observatory asks that people let them know as they'd like the ash samples. Lowen says collecting ash from eruptions helps them record and research volcanic activity. For up-to-date information on Shishaldin's eruption, check out the Alaska Volcano Observatory online at avo.alaska.edu. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Sitka considers reinstating a seasonal sales tax to help fund schools.
Right now, we have a whopping $0 saved up for our aging school infrastructure, and obviously that's not going to cut it.
And that is ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by Snap.
In the lower 48, from New York to Texas to Nevada, Americans are feeling the burn as heat waves blanket much of the country. But it's a different story in Anchorage. Alaska's largest city is having its coolest summer in 15 years, with rainy skies and windy weather keeping much of the sunshine at bay. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports on how tourists and locals alike are faring.
Jim Dorish of Frederick, Maryland is one of hundreds of tourists crowding downtown Anchorage on a recent rainy afternoon, many sporting umbrellas and light jackets. He says some friends of his had hit chilly weather visiting the city earlier this month, and he figured it would clear up.
They sent pictures of themselves all bundled up and, you know, all that kind of thing. So we kind of had an idea that maybe it wouldn't be like that.
But it was like that. Anchorage's summer has been one of the rainiest and coldest in over a decade. For tourists like Dorsch, it means not everything on their Alaska itinerary could be done.
We wanted to fly around the mountain, and the company that we chose to use canceled on us twice because of the weather.
It's a far cry from what's happening in the lower 48, where temperatures are skyrocketing. National Weather Service meteorologist Aviva Braun says the record-breaking heat is due to a high-pressure system that's stuck in place. While it's not out of the ordinary for those systems to get stuck, she says global warming has led to higher temperatures for those stretches of time.
The way that I would think about it is that it's allowing the opportunity for more of these extremes to occur.
Meanwhile, Braun says a low-pressure system has been stuck over Alaska, keeping temperatures cool.
That just goes to show that we've been under this pattern that we just haven't been able to shake. And every single time we see a light at the end of the tunnel, it gets squashed as another low moves through this upper level pattern.
While some Anchorage residents may be shocked at the relatively lackluster summer weather, others remember when it was like this every year.
Well, I have to tell you, it is like the old days, and it seemed to rain more in the old days.
Becky Garrick is enjoying her time on a bench by Westchester Lagoon with her grandson Alden, both in raincoats with temperatures in the mid-50s. Garrick has lived in Anchorage for more than 40 years. She says many of the past few summers have been unseasonably hot, and this year feels average.
Because none of us have air conditioning in our houses, this feels normal, and it's nice and cool, and I never get too hot. So yeah, actually, this feels pretty normal, and I'm very thankful we're here and not in the lower 48. We're like in Boise, where my son is. It's 105 today, so yeah, and where my parents in Arkansas are, it's over 100, so this is pretty sweet.
Further up the trail, Natalie Fraser is spending her college summer break in her hometown. She says she understands the desire for sunnier skies, having seen several hot summers recently.
I think that we were spoiled last summer by having just a week or a month and a half of absolutely amazing, gorgeous, sunny, everyday weather.
This summer, she says, even just a hint of sun feels special.
I think the fun thing is, whenever there is a sunny day in Anchorage, you see absolutely everyone outside. The restaurants are empty, the stores are empty.
Fraser says she is concerned for her friends in the lower 48 as they experience record high temperatures. National Weather Service officials estimate that close to a third of Americans were under extreme heat alerts over the weekend. That includes Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where tourist Alicia Zavonid is visiting from. During a hike up the popular Flat Top Mountain, she says the clear air and light rain is a sign that taking the trip was worth it.
I mean, it's scary, the fact that this is what you have to do to kind of have some fresh air, like to breathe in and without wanting to choke on the humidity, but it's nice.
As temperatures continue to rise globally, Zavonit says she's anxious to see other parts of Alaska while they're still somewhat normal.
I'm just happy that we were able to make this happen, and I'm really excited to see what's left of all of the beautiful glaciers and all of that good stuff before it goes bye-bye forever.
In the meantime, Weather Service officials are optimistic that Anchorage will see several days in a row of sunshine and warmth starting Thursday. But they say the warmth won't stick around for long. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
A riverbank stabilization project is scheduled to get underway this week at the Big Delta State Historical Park in Delta Junction. Erosion by the Tanana River has been an ongoing issue at the park, which includes Rika's Roadhouse and other historic buildings as well as trails.
We've been dealing with ongoing bank erosion problems at various points along the riverside part of the park for 15 years, probably a little more than that.
State Parks and Outdoor Recreation Northern Region Director Ian Thomas says an over $200,000 contract with a Delta-based company will fund erosion control between two earlier projects completed in 2007 and 2017.
400 total feet that have been in since 07 and 17 are holding up really nicely. We'll connect that in the middle with this current project to make a contiguous 600 feet.
Thomas says root wads, the stumps of large trees with roots attached, are the preferred material for bank stabilization because they are effective and create good fish habitat. But this summer's work will take a different approach to address the immediate erosion threat.
Place some riprap rock that can be moved, removed, or incorporated with the eventual root wad construction that'll take place later. But in the interim, it'll keep us from losing any more bank before lower water when the conditions are most appropriate to do the root wad installation itself.
Thomas says the contract calls for the project to be completed by the end of next summer, but was adjusted to include the riprap work this summer, given an erosion situation he describes as urgent.
Not to say that the water is ready to take any buildings today, but boy, there's not much room.
I would call this an emergency myself.
Delta Historical Society President Maureen Gardner has been pushing for work to address the accelerating erosion at the Big Delta Historical Park. She says the section of bank that the latest project will address is rapidly eroding, threatening a historic boat and a park trail.
This summer already, this past month, a big chunk fell out of it, coming closer and closer to the boat and the trail. It's right at the trail, as a matter of fact.
Gardner stresses that another section of erosion upstream of the current and past project areas also needs attention, and she's concerned about waiting until next year given Tanana River water levels she describes as ridiculously high.
I don't know if it's going to last until next year, though. I just don't have any idea what's going to happen with the bank.
Gardner, a retired state parks ranger, says she communicated her concerns to the agency. Thomas, with the state parks, says they are working on a plan to address the new upstream section of erosion.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Invasive plants and animals threaten Alaska's environment and economy and can spread to new locations by hitching a ride. Anyone can help prevent the spread of invasive species by remembering to play clean go, removing all plants, animals, and mud from boots, gear, and vehicles before entering and leaving recreational areas will help stop invasive species in their tracks. Learn more at playcleango.org. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The IBEW is the union of skilled hands and generous hearts, hardworking people on the job and off. It's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW. This message sponsored by the IBEW Local 1547.
Sitka is thinking about capitalizing on the rebound in cruise tourism to help maintain its schools. A ballot proposition that would impose a dedicated 1% seasonal sales tax passed the local assembly recently and is likely to appear before voters this fall. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
A 1% seasonal sales tax in Sitka is nothing new. For nearly two decades, the city has raised the sales tax from 5% to 6% each summer to pay down school bonds. But that debt was paid off this year, and the extra 1% tax automatically sunset. Now, the Sitka Assembly wants to ask voters to reinstate the seasonal tax permanently. Mayor Steven Eisenbeis co-sponsored the proposition with member Kevin Mosier. Eisenbeis said establishing a fund for school infrastructure was long overdue.
for probably 8 of my last 9 years, I've been fighting for a mechanism to fund school building maintenance and replacement. Right now, we have a whopping $0 saved up for our aging school infrastructure. And obviously, that's not going to cut it. We do need to provide top quality buildings for our kids.
Eisenbeiss said that while he understood the ramifications of reinstating the sales tax, he was concerned that the state's support for new school construction or major rehab will diminish in the near future. A few Sitkins spoke in favor of the proposition, including former city administrator Keith Brady. However, Brady wondered if they would consider splitting the fund to cover some teacher pay as well.
And I think that it also helps that all the tourism that we're having and continues to increase just helps out with funding the needs of our city, especially our school district. And like I said, the only change that I would make is somehow that it goes into maybe a portion of it with discussion of the school district going to help fund teachers, because we keep losing positions. And it keeps making it harder and harder for the teachers to do their jobs with less and less.
Assemblymember Tor Christensen said he could support the ballot proposition as written, but like Brady, thought they might consider dividing the money up, instead putting a small portion toward city infrastructure.
I don't know if we want to think about setting a split between school infrastructure and infrastructure in general. I don't know if you guys thought about that. But like if we said 70% goes towards school infrastructure and 30% towards roads and the like, it might be worth thinking about.
The assembly discussed the idea, but ultimately agreed that for now, funding one thing instead of two would keep things straightforward at the ballot box. Not everyone in the public saw it that way. Shirley Robards, who owns a downtown retail store, didn't think voters would like the idea. She discouraged the assembly from reinstating the tax.
I just don't understand it. You're supposed to be saying that the reason you did it was because you have extra money. Then all of a sudden, you need another percent. I don't know. I just don't know. I've talked to a lot of people. Yeah, go ahead and put it on the voter thing. I don't think you're going to win, though.
Mayor Eisenbeiss said that if the tax proposition makes it on the ballot, he would pass the torch to the voters to get it across the finish line.
I find myself in the position simply to bring it forward to the voters, and I want the citizens of Sitka to take ownership and lead on this. If there are interest groups that feel strongly either way, I encourage them to get out and inform people as to the vote. I don't find it to be my role to advocate on a ballot issue like this.
Ultimately, the assembly approved the ballot prop 5-0. But before it can be printed on ballots for the October municipal election, it must be approved by the assembly again on final reading. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
If they were lucky, Juneau residents wandering the Barrens neighborhood might have stumbled upon something magic earlier this month. Every year, a fairy forest pops up by Evergreen Avenue, just for a little while. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry visited the whimsical spot before it disappeared.
Hi, what's your favorite part?
Well, I already went up here.
You already went up here?
I was still coming up.
You're still coming up.
This year, visitors to the forest first saw a fairy toll box that says, "Fairies do not use money. Leave your piggy bank at home," accompanied by a list of acceptable toll offerings like shells, drawings, and feathers. Then, down a long, winding path, little houses, villages, and creatures appear in the forest. A giant jellyfish made of scrap fabric and a trash can lid hangs to the side of the path. These designs are all the handiwork of Sarah Nico, a University of Alaska Southeast professor of behavioral health. She was inspired to make a fairy forest when she bought her house. She says she already had an idea to build one, but something cemented that decision only a few days after she moved in.
And I hear this little voice outside by the pond. And it says, "This is where the fairies live." And I peek out my window, and it's my neighbor and their little friend. And I looked at my husband, and I'm like, "We're doing that fairy forest, and I'm doing it big."
That voice came from Lily Race. As Nico started building the forest to debut for a few days each year, Race quickly became involved, recommending additions of what she thought was missing.
And you'll say, "I think they need a theater." And so we create a theater.
And then we create a post office.
And then we create a post office, right? Because how are they going to mail their letters out?
they wrote a little book about the forest together, following the story of a fairy named Petal who came to the forest from a mythical land far away.
Once upon a time, there was a fairy named Petal. She lived in a land called Avalor, where the sun never took a nap. When she was just a sweet fairy, no longer than a gumdrop, her Nana and Pops told her the land of Juno was this was a magical land where stars twinkled when the sun went to sleep.
All of this began 5 years ago. Brace is 9 years old now, and she and Nico still work together on the design every year.
What things do you think that the fairy forest still needs that we don't have yet?
I don't think we have a school.
Oh, I think Fendera has a high school, maybe an elementary school.
Can we get a kindergarten?
A kindergarten. Yeah, of course.
And then maybe a dog walking thing?
Like a dog walking service? Maybe a gnome with walking a bunch of dogs? I like that idea.
Sometimes Nico will add to it on the fly, based on comments she hears from visitors.
Just this morning, I heard a little kid yesterday go, "Oh, there's the school. Where's the teacher?" I'm like, "Oh," so I made a little like UAS graduation gnome this morning just to put there.
She made scenes dedicated to the couple she bought the house from, like Mark's Park. The park is fenced in with stepping stones and a gnome with its own Pepsi.
He's 90 now, and so I do owe a lot of just gratitude for them for being caretakers of this land for 50 years.
Some of the houses have laundry lines, furniture, and fairies and gnomes living in them. Ray said her favorite is the cat house, complete with mini boxes of litter. Nico says she saves household trash to turn into buildings and furniture for the forest.
And so everything I try to use is recycled. So these pieces, they're No. 5 plastic, and you can't recycle them. And so I decided, well, I'm just going to make houses and things out of them so that they don't go in the landfill.
When her water filter broke, she turned it into a bright red house. She said a wall of her basement is completely full of all the fairy garden stuff she's made over the years, and it takes her 16 hours to set it up. The reactions she gets from the community make it all worth it.
Yeah, so the children just have a place to come and explore. I love sitting up there and listening to them, like the oohs and the ahs, and just hearing the fun of play, because it's just not often that kids get to do these kind of, like, just fun little things and make memories, you know?
The forest has been taken down for the year, but Nico says to stay tuned to see when it pops up again next summer. She doesn't like to advertise it, though.
I think there's just something special about when is the fairy forest going to happen. It kind of adds to the mystique.
One hint, it'll be a sunny week when she sets it all up again. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cromery.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Jack Darrell in Dillingham, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Yvonne Crumry in Juneau, Sophia Stewart-Rossi in Unalaska, Wesley Early in Anchorage, and Catherine Rose in Sitka. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
And by
Alaska Air Cargo, providing Gold Streak Express shipping for urgent deliveries throughout Alaska, with connections to more than 100 destinations in the lower 48 and Hawaii. More at alaskacargo.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.